Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This is a republic if you can keep it. Political news and commentary with Mark Brewer and Jeff Timmer.
I'm Jeff Timmer. Welcome to the Convicts and Conspiracy Theorists campaign edition of A Republic If You Can Keep It. The screening for new Republican National Committee employees starts with a question of, do they agree that the 2020 election was stolen? Michigan's own Ronna Don't Call Me Romney McDaniels NBC gig lasts 0.27 Scaramucci's after an on-air rebellion. The Zillow listings for Trump properties will have to wait as the sneaker and Bible salesman gets a $300 million in 1 week reprieve from the New York Court of Appeals. But now Trump gets to pray about his first criminal trial, now set to begin on April 15th, which likely means a few fewer rounds of golf.
I'm Mark Brewer, back from a break and re-energized for the next 7 months of this campaign. Lots of news from Michigan this week. Former Governor Granholm returns to Michigan bearing gifts, $1.5 billion to restart the Palisades nuclear plant. Ottawa County may be Michigan's most conservative politically, but its voters aren't at all happy with its new ultra-right-wing mob, which is running the county, and they may face the consequences at the polls next summer. Protecting health care, Social Security, and Medicare are back as fundamental campaign issues, and Biden's polling numbers are up in Michigan and nationally, and the campaign has opened a second office in Michigan. Meanwhile, Trump's Michigan, including the Republican Party, remains in shambles. Later in the podcast, we'll be joined again by longtime Republican political consultant Stuart Stevens, now a senior advisor to the Lincoln Project. But before we get to him, Jeff, let's talk about a couple of stories here. I'd really like to hear your take on the whole imbroglio involving Ronna Romney McDaniel and whether NBC, you think, did the right thing.
What she's experiencing is what has happened time and time again to people in the Trump world. They demonstrate this loyalty, fealty to Trump. He throws them over the side. And then they try to re-enter polite society and find out that there's actually consequences to their actions. And I want to make real clear here that I agree completely with what NBC did, with what the on-air talent did, with what the wider world of journalism did, with expressing displeasure and outrage about Ronna's hiring. And this is not what some Republicans are trying to point out or trying to make it. This isn't a silencing of people with whom they have difference of political opinion. This isn't silencing political discourse. What they're saying with this action is, we are not going to give platform to liars, propagandists, and co-conspirators in efforts to overturn a free and fair election and democracy in the United States. Ronna comes out on Meet the Press and says, well, I happen to represent the views of 74 million people who voted for Donald Trump, and they believe the election was stolen. The rest of the world does not need to treat that as true and legitimate. And if we normalize that absurd position, if we stipulate that that's where we have to accept the fact that they believe that, we can say, yeah, they clearly believe it. They're nuts. We don't have to give this insanity, this assault on democracy, an equal footing with the truth. Facts are what they are. And the fact is that Ronna Romney McDaniel was part of the effort to recruit these fake electors to implement the conspiracy to operationalize that attempt to hijack a U.S. presidential election and have the person who legitimately won the election by hook and crook cheated out of that cheated out of the White House, but more importantly, nullifying the votes of the majority of Americans and a majority of the Electoral College, the majority of states in the country. And it's outrageous. They shouldn't be treated and welcomed back into normal society. There are some from the Trump campaign who have gone out and said, what I was part of was wrong, or they were part of the Trump administration, the Trump White House. They've come out and said, I was wrong. Trump is a threat. Here's why. Rana wasn't willing to do that. She's never admitted that she was wrong, that he was wrong, and she got what she deserved.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, Jeff. You know, what was disappointing to me was that the initial decision by ABC to even hire her. Like, what were these people thinking? You would think by now, basically, almost 8 years into what we may come to call the Trump era, in terms of his place in American politics, that you would even consider hiring somebody like that who believed in what Kellyanne Conway would call the alternative facts. Right, Jeff? That the media's got to give up on this both sidesism. This isn't both sides. There aren't alternative facts. There's one set of facts. Trump lost, Biden won, and as you said, Romney has never recanted. I think NBC eventually did the right thing, but it's unfortunate that they had to be publicly and otherwise pushed to do the right thing and not put Ronna Romney on the air and give her that platform.
Yeah, let's look at MSNBC. They have one of their biggest shows, Morning Joe, is former Republican congressman, conservative Republican congressman Joe Scarborough, former Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele is a host of one of their programs. Nicole Wallace, who was a longtime Republican operative, a senior figure in the George W. Bush campaigns and White House, is one of their key hosts. John Kasich, Republican governor of Ohio, former congressman, candidate for president, is one of their on-air contributors. They have a lot of Republican voices. They do not have an obligation to give platform to the insanity, the MAGA, the white nationalists, the election deniers, just because they represent a majority of Republican voters. That it needs to be reported on is the danger it is not accommodated as a legitimate faction in American politics. It's a disease that needs to be defeated and eradicated from American political life.
Well, I agree, Jeff. 100%.
Well, Mark, yes. Abortion politics, personal liberty, taking that to another extension, has played a huge role in elections since the Roe versus Wade was overturned in June of 2022 by the Dobbs decision. We continue to see the ripple effects of that decision. We had a case being argued this week before the Supreme Court. We had a special election in ruby red Alabama, a ruby red district that's been red forever. Republicans win in suburban Birmingham. That Democrat flipped. She ran on the extremism of Republicans, Bama, on the very infamous AVF case and abortion itself. And she won going away. She won nearly two-thirds of the votes in what had been a historic Republican district. Is that a harbinger? Is that a canary in the coal mine for Republicans out there that this is going to continue to be a very deadly issue for them at the ballot box?
No, I think that's right, Jeff. And we'll talk about the Supreme Court in a minute, but I think the Alabama election is a little more telling. Obviously, it's just one election, but it clearly turned on that issue. And like you said, turned a red district blue, which nobody expected and never should have happened. But for that decision by the Alabama Supreme Court saying IVF created embryos are persons and have legal rights. And the Republicans have been running from that ever since, including Mike Rogers and other folks here who previously had the other position. But I think that is, again, it's a signal that this issue of choice, personal freedom, and so forth, where the government should not be involved, is going to continue to be an issue. I was really pleased this week to see the governor, the attorney general, and others here in Michigan continue to talk about this issue, taking advantage of the U.S. Supreme Court argument that this week it was focused on whether the FDA made the right decision in approving the use of mifepristone which is a key ingredient in medicinal abortions, which now constitutes the majority of abortions in this country. But a right-wing group of doctors brought a lawsuit saying the FDA's approval was wrong and Mifepristone should not be available. And God, the Supreme Court stayed that decision a couple of years ago, and now it's before them on the merits. I always try to be careful about reading things into what courts are doing, but there seemed to be a lot of hostility, even from the conservative justices, to that argument, mainly on a procedural issue about whether those doctors and the other plaintiffs had what we call standing to bring a lawsuit, whether they were injured sufficiently that they could even challenge the FDA decision. So hopefully that goes away. But I think these issues are going to continue to be out there. One of the issues raised in that argument, Jeff, was what's called the Comstock Act, which is an archaic law that prohibits the mailing of lascivious and lewd materials to the mail. And that has been interpreted by some to include mailing chemicals and drugs used in the abortion process. And it seems to me the conservatives are licking their chops for Trump to get elected and that law to be enforced. So this is going to continue to be an issue. And it's good to see Democrats like the governor continue to remind the voters that even though we have constitutional protection here, that abortion is going to be on the ballot again in Michigan this fall.
We just got some breaking news I shared in the chat. Donald Trump is going to be in Grand Rapids on Tuesday to talk about immigration, the border, the murder that took place in Grand Rapids. The Republicans are certainly politicizing this issue. And we'll be talking more about this issue with our guests later in the program.
Yeah, there's no surprise that Trump would come in here and demagogue and politicize that issue as well. But I want to talk about another invasion that then got some headlines here in Michigan. Apparently, the Gonzagans are invading Michigan and provoked an outcry from Republican legislators. Tell our listeners about what happened.
Whacked out Republican State Representative Matt Maddock, who I'm sure many of our listeners know as one of the leading pro-Trump servile acolytes here in Michigan, tweeted out this picture from the Detroit Air Force this morning of planes and buses, and with the caption, "The three busfuls of illegal immigrants arriving in Michigan." The picture, it turns out, is the Gonzaga basketball team showing up in Detroit to play at Little Caesars Arena in the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 games this weekend. It's one of these tweet first, ask questions later kind of things. But the Republicans, including Maddock, are backing away from it, doubling down on, well, it doesn't matter that we're wrong. We're still having this, but we could have been right. And then they pivot right back rather than saying, whoops, we made a mistake. They pivot to the awful situation in Grand Rapids, where we did have a murder involving apparently an undocumented immigrant. But what they're showing here is that facts aren't going to matter. They're going to just ride this soapbox of xenophobic outrage and fear because they have nothing whatsoever optimistic or positive to sell about what America's future may look like.
Yes. Yeah, that's right, Jim. And before we introduce our guests, let's talk about one more topic if we can. Well, there's been some positive developments for Biden, not only nationally, but here in Michigan since then, that great State of the Union speech. His poll numbers are up, not just in Michigan, but nationally. He's got a record-setting fundraiser scheduled for tonight, which is going to raise $25 million, breaking all records. That's a sign, I think, of enthusiasm and energy there. He's staffing up in Michigan through the Michigan Democratic Party. And we contrast that with what we're hearing out of the Republican Party, where not only did they, when Trump took over the party, they laid off virtually the entire staff. But now to get rehired, you have to become an election denier. And in the course of your interview, you have to say, I agree that the 2020 election was stolen. Jeff, but you've been around building infrastructure, winning elections for decades. That doesn't sound like to me, a great way to build a staff and a campaign.
No, and that comes on also after reports this week in the Detroit News and other outlets, where now Republican State Party Chairman, former Congressman Pete Hoekstra, was lamenting the fact that the Trump campaign has yet to invest in Michigan. They have no resources. They have no staff. They have no plan. And they're 7 months away from the election and still standing still when it comes to the infrastructure And despite what the smoke and mirrors of Donald Trump's campaign and really the smoke and mirrors of everything about Donald Trump, it's all an illusion. They think that they can jazz hands their way into winning a tough state in a close race. I just don't see that. They would need a big assist from maybe it's Bobby Kennedy. No Label seems to be collapsing under its own weight. There are some intangibles out there that could impact the outcome of this election that will be different dynamic than what we saw in 2020 when it was just Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. Does Bobby Kennedy end up as the Libertarian candidate? Do the Libertarians have somebody? Does Bobby Kennedy make the ballot in Michigan? There's some questions out there, but all of the fundamentals, when you look at this from the perspective of political operatives and people who know what it takes to win campaigns take two simple things to win: money and everything else. And right now, the Trump campaign seems to lack both. They lack money and they lack everything else. And at some point, that's going to make a difference. And it's not just going to make a difference for the Biden campaign. It's going to make a difference up and down the ticket. And that's something I've said repeatedly on this podcast, is if I were the down ticket Republicans, I'd be shitting bricks right now about how the weakness of the Trump campaign and what all the future indicators really look like, despite the illusion of some early polls, what the real fundamentals of the campaign look like, I'd be really nervous about the impact up and down the ticket. And I really do think that we need to be cautious. We need to be vigilant. When I say we, in the pro-democracy coalition, but there are more of us than there are of them. And the opportunity looks better right now. I would much rather be in the position of the Biden campaign, despite the deluge of negative news you get from certainly the right-wing media and some of the mainstream media that are more interested in talking about what they think are Biden's weaknesses than Biden's strengths when paired to his opponent, which I think are numerous. And the way this campaign is likely to play out, to me, would favor Joe Biden, certainly in Michigan.
Lincoln Project Senior Advisor Stuart Stevens joins the conversation after these messages on A Republic, If You Can Keep It.
Epic MRA is pleased to sponsor this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with nearly four decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, and public policy issues.
Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, all levels of state and local government, and membership organizations. For the November 2022 election, Epic MRA published the most accurate final pre-election poll among several state and national polling firms.
Our polls most closely predicted the actual election results in races for governor, secretary of state, and attorney general, as well as the three ballot proposals.
Epic MRA is clearly the go-to polling firm in Michigan. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
Ben Franklin may have invented the Franklin stove to stay warm, but we go Ben one better. We have the Ben Franklin hoodie, dedicated to Americans for sanity. But wait, there's more. Our merch store has coffee mugs for Democrats, uncrazy Republicans, and free-thinking independents, as well as t-shirts for the discerning democracy lover. Just click on the Merch Center link on our homepage, arepublicpodcast.com. Show your support for political sanity at the podcast merch store. It's your duty as an American.
We're joined this week by my colleague at the Lincoln Project, Stuart Stevens. Stu has worked at the top level of more presidential and senatorial and gubernatorial campaigns than just about anyone alive. His first presidential effort, the Bob Dole campaign in 1996, and he's been involved in every Republican campaign since, up until the era of Donald Trump. His book, The Big Enchilada, is a chronicle of George W. Bush's 2000 campaign. His ninth book, The Conspiracy to End America, Five Ways came out last October. He has also written extensively for dramatic television series, starting with Northern Exposure and including I'll Fly Away, K Street, Commander in Chief, and others. Well, Stuart, thank you for joining us again. It's not often somebody comes on this podcast and is willing to come back after having endured us the first time. So thank you.
Well, thanks for asking me to the party, guys. Great to be here.
There's so much going on in Michigan, and always seems to be at the epicenter of American politics right now, certainly the Republican politics with so much of the dysfunction. Border politics, immigration politics has certainly been a big issue, and Republicans are seemingly ready to make that kind of the hill they die on this year, and nowhere is that more evident than in Michigan. What are you seeing in other states? What, you know, given your long history with presidential campaigns and dealing with this issue, you know, how would you recommend that pro-democracy Democratic candidates start to deal with this conundrum of border politics?
It's an example of some element of our politics that has been broken for a long time. There's been all these efforts to get some comprehensive immigration reform, and it just hasn't happened. And that's, so there's that dysfunction that keeps repeating itself. Look, if I was advising the president, I would say be very proactive on it, which he's tried to be, to remind people of what they've attempted to do. They've introduced border legislation before, stuff that would affect it. I would be all over it. I would run right at it. I wouldn't look like it's something that you're afraid of. Trump was a failure. The whole essence of the Trump campaign embodies failure on the border. Mexico was going to pay for the wall. He was going to stop all of this. And Obama ended up to 40 more people than Trump. So I would run right at it and give all the body language. You're very happy to run on this as a major issue.
And we have a case here in Michigan, news story just in the last few days, where an undocumented immigrant who had been deported under the Trump administration, unclear when he came back into the country, but he was back in the country, and is now had been charged with the murder of his girlfriend, who's an American citizen, and this happened in or around the Grand Rapids area in Michigan. And naturally, this case is capturing local news here in key electoral vote state. What would your recommendation be to the governor, other politicians, on how to lead on this issue, given these circumstances?
It's a horrible, obvious tragedy, just unspeakable tragedy. But it's not a tragedy about immigration. It's a tragedy about law and order. People, immigrants on whole, have a lower crime rate than those who are born in America. I think that you have to look at it as to speak the truth, that people who come over the border are not people who are any different than the rest of us. And there's good people, mostly, and there's some bad people. And just call it like it is. I've always thought that the greatest worry for America would be, what would happen if people weren't trying to get into America? So what signal would that send about what our country has been to? How many people are trying to get into Russia now? How many people are trying to get into North Korea? It's, you know, America is this immigrant country, and yes, it has to be a process. Yes, it has to be controlled. But the fact that it is a problem is in many ways a celebration of American success.
You're a Mississippian. Is the rhetoric, we're seeing a lot of rhetoric in Michigan from Republicans, especially the most vocal Trump-aligned MAGA Republicans, talking about how those people are coming here for our women. That seems to be an old trope here in politics. It's not very subtle.
Yeah, if this was like a Norwegian immigration crisis, where, you know, or too many Swedes were coming into the country, as there have been in other immigration waves. I think one out of every four Swedes at one point immigrated to Michigan. I don't think the rhetoric would be the same. Yeah, the essence of Trump's candidacy is fear. The essence of Trump candidacy is a strong man, I will protect you. So what does that mean? You have to have a breakdown of our systems, and you have to believe that the systems have failed, the institutions have failed, therefore we need a strong man. And there has been this broad attack on the judicial system as a whole. So in a strange way, I think that Trump's attacks on legal system in New York, legal system in Georgia, legal system wherever he has been charged at Washington, D.C., is linked to this sort of rhetoric about the border, because it is a loss of faith in judicial institutions. And we have to have someone who can enforce order. And that's a very old trope, and there's always some otherness to it. Viktor Orban has dined out on this tremendously in Hungary, though there's not really an immigration crisis in Hungary. In 1980, Ronald Reagan announces for president in the general election in front of the Statue of Liberty as a celebration of immigration. There actually, you can see it on YouTube, there was a debate in Texas in the primary between him and Bush, arguing over who was more liberal on immigration, but they really got into it. Then Reagan signed a bill that made everybody in the country legal, I think, before 1983, signed it in 1987, I think, 1986. And his last speech as president was an ode to immigration, a beautiful speech. And that's the party that we joined. And while there's a lot of lip service paid to, well, we're pro-legal immigration, it's just illegal immigration, it all gets blurred, and it creates a certain antagonism toward those who really believe in America so much that they will abandon everything to come here. And I think it's breaking faith with the basic American definition of what it is to be an American.
Let's turn our sights a little bit to Donald Trump and the ongoing legal troubles. This week we saw, entered the week with the possibility of the Attorney General in New York seizing his properties. He was granted a 1 week reprieve by their Court of Appeals. The bond that he has to place was lowered. Word on the street is he still can't cover that, get anybody to underwrite that bond. You know, is any of this going to matter? It's certainly not going to matter to the hardcore MAGAs and the Democrats. Does the folks that we at Lincoln Project like to call the Bannon line, those disaffected Republicans or center-right moderates, does any of this matter anymore? Has this all been baked into the cake?
Listen, I think it does. I think that there is something that is very troubling about seeing a potential president in legal trouble in, what, four jurisdictions now. Trump, in these sort of a few self-reflecting moments, has been reported that he said, nobody likes to be indicted. This is bad. And it's true. There is no institutions in American life, no role models that glorify being in this kind of serious trouble. And if I could place a bet in Vegas, because you could get good odds on it, I really like the bet that I think Trump, maybe the third week in October, could really start to collapse with this sort of cumulative weight of, do you really want this person to be your president? Probably the conventional wisdom is accurate. It'll probably come down to 400,000 people. It'll probably come down to a handful of people in Michigan, Wisconsin. But I still think that there's a chance that it could be as it was in 1980 when Carter Reagan was very close until about October 20th, and then things just really started to go for Carter. I don't really know, if you're not for Donald Trump now, what is he going to tell you to get him to be for you? Or what is a positive message that he has? Whereas I think the Biden campaign, they have a lot of good stuff to tell people. And a lot of people don't know about this. It's a slow process. It can be a boring process. But to me, and we've talked about this before, Jeff, I think there's two critical tasks that the Biden campaign has to accomplish. I think that it has to be the safe choice. Trump has to be seen as more dangerous, which should not be hard. Last time he was president, he tried to overthrow the country or the government. And I think that Biden needs to represent the future. It's fascinating if you look at it this way. So these are the last presidents we're ever going to have born in the shadow of World War II. These are the last link between the greatest generation and the Oval Office that we're going to have. And whoever we elect is going to be the oldest president we've ever had. So it's really a question of, you're passing a torch to a next generation, a new generation of leadership when they leave office. And what is it going to be passed with that torch? What sort of values will be passed? And the contrast is just so stark. And I think that Joe Biden represents more of the American mainstream, that there is an optimism to being an American. It's the essence of America. You don't come to America if you're pessimistic. It was true 300 years ago. It's true this morning. You don't come here thinking that things are going to be worse. You come here thinking things are going to be better. And the whole Republican universe now seems at war with the modern world. It's just astounding. How do you get in a fight with Ron DeSantis with Disney, the happiness company? How do you get in a fight with the NFL? How do you get in a fight with Nike? How do you get in a fight with Walmart when they have a mask mandate for a period of time? There's like an uncomfortableness with the way the world is changing. And I've said this before, one of my favorite candidates and pals is my old Mississippi buddy and client, Haley Barbour. And Haley liked to say, be for the future, it's going to happen anyway. And it just strikes me as like something that the Republican Party has forgotten about.
Yeah, they really do seem to be scared of the future. Like you mentioned earlier, Stu, this is a campaign about fear. So fear of change, fear of otherness, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that is a big question before the country does fall. Not only question, the bigger question of, are we a democracy still and do we support democracy? But are we a country of hopefulness looking forward, or are we tied and mired in fear of each other?
And think about how much, in at least modern history, that is out of the mainstream. So let me just go back to Jimmy Carter. Jimmy Carter was an optimistic candidate. I'll never lie to you. Total positive. His main campaign color was green because it was positive. And then Reagan. Reagan was very much the optimistic candidate. You know, that Carter become the malaise president, that we can be better. And then when you had Bush, 1,000 points of light, it was a positive vision. Because didn't mock him. I don't know what you're talking about, 1,000 points of light. And then so Bill Clinton comes along and his unofficial slogan is, the future's so bright, you're going to need shades. And when I worked for Bush, really the only message that worked was restoring honor and dignity to the White House, which was a very positive, optimistic message. And it's actually amazing that Bush won, because the right track of the country was way to the good. On election day in 2000, consumer confidence was the highest it had ever been on any election day that we had tracked. We used to have this inside joke in the Bush campaign in kind of the dark moments that our message was, things are great, vote for change. And that's a race that Al Gore should have won. Incumbent should win. He was basically an incumbent. He should have won that race. And he didn't, though he did get 500,000 more votes, but he didn't win the electoral vote, really because of that message of optimism. So certainly Barack Obama was a tremendously optimistic candidate. I just think that if you go back to that Trump inaugural address, he's the only person who ever got inaugurated as president in a bad mood. Like, how do you, you're standing up there and you're like pissed off, this is really bad. And then he gets this whole stupid fight about the size of the crowd. And of course, the only president who left who didn't go to the swearing in of his successor. And I just say this over, if you have not looked at the video of him announcing in Waco on the 30th anniversary of the Branch Davidians, I finally made myself look at it for this book I wrote that came out last fall. I thought I knew what it said. I'd seen clips of it. But when you see the whole damn thing, It is the scariest thing you've ever seen in your life. He is basically declaring war on the United States of America. It is the final battle. It's a war of retribution. And instead of opening with Pledge of Allegiance, the national anthem, it opens with this weird anthem sung by these now incarcerated insurrectionists. And just the degree to which that is out of the mainstream, say what you will about most presidential announcements, and we've all been involved in it, for Democrats or Republicans, right? They have a form. They're positive. You have maybe different messages, different things. Barack Obama famously announced in Springfield, invoking Abraham Lincoln. When Mitt Romney announced, we did it in New Hampshire in this beautiful field. It was very optimistic, very positive. And Trump, it's just so striking. And I think that's why he's going to lose. I just think that ultimately, most Americans just don't wake up that mad at the world.
When you think about the dynamics of a presidential race, what's this, the first time since 1892, where you have two presidents running against one another?
Yep.
This isn't just a referendum on the incumbent. Is he doing a good job? Should you give somebody different a chance? This is a challenger who has his own incumbency record, and it's not a good one. The most job losses in American history, bodies stacked like cornwood in makeshift morgues. Republicans just kind of whistle past that on the campaign trail. They talk about the first 2 years of Trump's economy, which was the lingering effects of the Obama economy, and then just don't mention that COVID part and leaving office with an economy in shambles, a country in tatters, and massive death and plague, and then a violent insurrection. It seems like those things, as much as we become numb to the news, that somewhere I like to say on Twitter every once in a while that there's more of us than there are of them.
Yes.
And they're counting on the apathy, the wearing down, the weariness that you start to feel after day, this deluge of assault on American values and democracy and the Constitution and the Statue of Liberty, everything. It wears me down when you look at the normal mainstream Americans who don't live and breathe politics. They care more about who wins the Masked Singer than wins elections normally. They don't want this deluge of politics in their face every day. It's that face, or it's that ad that the Lincoln Project put out, in your face last week. Do they really, could it come down to something so simple? Do you want him in your face
every day,
24/7 for another 4 years?
I think that's a huge issue. And it's fascinating because it takes what has been a problem for Joe Biden in other races, that he's a boring guy. So when boring becomes stable and predictable, and that becomes a plus, it's like a classic example. I'm a big believer in the theory that countries kind of invent leaders when they need them. So look at Winston Churchill, 1936. He's this outcast, lunatic, drunk, bellicose, wants to go to war with everybody. 1941, he's saving the world. All of those things that were negatives become positives. Same with Margaret Thatcher. She was this sort of brittle, not particularly likable figure. And then they needed the Iron Lady to bring Britain back. And I think something like that happened. I say it could happen with Reagan. We invented Reagan as this figure. And I think that happened in 20 with Biden, that a lot of the things that had been negatives for him became positives. He's been in office since he was a teenager, but all of a sudden the idea of having somebody who knows how to run government wasn't such a bad thing. And he's not the most charismatic guy, but that was okay because you wanted somebody that you didn't have to wake up every morning and wonder what kind of mood they were in. And that should be one of the great benefits of being in a civil society. You shouldn't have to think about what happens, what mood that dear leader is in. You know, in 20, the Lincoln Project, and this is before I was involved, I think before you were involved, so we're not bragging on ourselves. There was a theory among Democrats that the race should not be about Donald Trump. The thinking being that there's nothing you can say about Donald Trump that'll change anybody's opinion. everybody has an opinion on Donald Trump. Elizabeth Warren articulated this, as she does very well. It has to be about issues, as the 2018 election really was, a lot about healthcare. And the Lincoln Project came along and said, no, that's wrong. It's about Donald Trump. He's the first issue, the second issue, the fourth issue, the fifth issue. I think in 20, there's not as much to be gained by saying that Donald Trump is a terrible person. People establish that in 20. So if you go, okay, he's a really terrible person. I don't think that's bad. I just don't think it gets you very far. I think what you have to remind people is he was a terrible president. And it made him a terrible person, made him a terrible president. Those same flaws, that inability to make anything about anything but yourself, that inability to surround yourself and listen to people who have different opinions, the inability to process information. Trump is just a dumb guy. And we have to remind people that it was a failed presidency. And I think it's very troubling when you look at people and they say that they thought the economy was better under Trump. Like you say, since Herbert Hoover, he's the only person that lost more jobs, had fewer jobs when he took office. The deficit increased more when he was president than any other time in history. He was an international embarrassment, humiliation, the way that he sucked up to these dictators and tyrants. That's an American president doing that? If you look at the video of him and Putin in Helsinki, it just churns your stomach. You can think of Putin now as this mass murderer. So it's a really unique election because it's not just that we have two former presidents. It's that the majority of one party believes that the incumbent president is not a legal president. I keep thinking about that. What is it like? We've all had friends that worked in the White House on congressional relations trying to. What is it like to work for Biden and go try to get Republicans to support some piece of legislation or initiative? And you walk into somebody's office. Okay, it's one thing you don't like my boss. I get that. We don't agree. But you think my boss is not really president. So that means I'm here as an imposter. How do they get anything done? It's astounding to me. And when you look at the numbers out of the primary, it was a very good sign whether or not you were going to vote for Donald Trump or not if you believe that Joe Biden was a legal president. It's a gateway drug to buying into Donald Trump. And I think that's very encouraging for Biden because there's a winning majority of those people in the Republican primaries, but they're not a winning majority of those people in the country. And that's why when you see these polls that are so disturbing that say Republicans are equally, say that this race is as much about defending democracy as Democrats, but they mean two totally different things. When Republicans say that, that means we have to restore democracy because the guy in the White House now stole it. And where Democrats or other independents who support Biden see this, they're saying Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. And those are two competing visions. And we believe, and we're right, they're wrong. And I think that's something Democrats ought to say more, because there are more of us than there are of them. And you ought to say that. And I think you ought to go and say, we're right, they're wrong. And I think you need that kind of moral clarity, which I think Biden has at times. I thought the Valley Forge speech very much captured that. The State of the Union got that. It's haunted by Clinton's denunciation of Trump supporters as deplorables. But I don't think you can run from that. I think you have to say that this is a fundamental difference in what it means to be an American. Because it's true. It is.
With that, Stu, thank you for your insight based on your vast experience with this. All the great advice that you offered to folks here today. I hope you are right that there's an October collapse in the cards for Donald Trump, from your mouth to God's ear. But thank you again for being with us. Like Jeff said, repeat guest. We really appreciate you sharing your time and expertise with us, and we'll keep plugging in the right direction here.
Well, thank you, guys, for everything you wake up and do every day.
That's it for this week's show. Our great thanks to Stuart Stevens for his insights into the most bizarre presidential campaign in my or any other lifetime.
Mark and I will be two of the panelists at next month's Michigan Democratic Rural Summit at Shanty Creek in Bel Air. If you are interested in attending, there's a link to the summit registration on our website, arepublicpodcast.com.
And if the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. We'll talk with you then, and we leave you with the Gonzaga fight song.
Republic, if you can keep it, is a production of Michigan Citizens for a Better Tomorrow.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.